Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Paramananda Ishada. That probably isn't right, but I want to welcome him.
That's perfect.
How do you pronounce your name? How do you pronounce your name, P?
You know, P is good enough, but yeah, Paramananda.
Paramananda.
It's easier in Spanish.
And your last name? Your last name is Ishaya. Okay. Ishaya. Okay. He is the author of Without You There, The Zen of Unity, a delightful book about enlightenment, which I enjoyed immensely. He is, I guess, a spiritual seeker who's actually had quite a few, shall we say, aha moments along the path. And this is the book to share these with us. And it actually is very, very good advice. So, P, would you like to tell our listeners about how you got interested in enlightenment and spiritual development? And what happened next?
Sure. Yeah, I guess I've always kind of felt like a bit like an alien, kind of isolated and alone, and I didn't feel like I didn't really fit in. And for some reason, I always knew that there was this way home, and I believed in God. I grew up with in a Christian background, so I believed in that there was this God out there, and I wanted to connect with it, him, her. I didn't really know what it was, but.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, I had a lot of anxiety, so that was the foreground of, that's like the theme of my life, this energy of anxiety. So I could never quite feel at peace, even though I had moments of peace. I could never quite totally feel at peace. And so there was this angst or anxiousness kind of always there. And then, you know, like growing up, I had a lot of motivation. I guess you could say I suffered a lot, and I yearned for peace. So I started dabbling. When I was in my early 20s, I started really getting into, it happened long before, but I started really getting into reading spiritual books. And you know, I picked up Eckhart Tolle's book and started reading that, and I thought, this is what I want. I want to experience this. And every book seemed to lead to the next book. I live near a New Age bookstore, so I go there all the time. Grab a coffee and start reading, and but I wasn't quite, I still wasn't quite content, so I just kept looking and exploring, and eventually, I got led to a psychic fair where they had all sorts of readers, and I knew that this lady there, this particular lady was there, had something for me. And I was there to figure out what I did wrong in a past life, because I figured I must have did something really bad. Poor me. Why am I suffering? And so I'm waiting and waiting. She wasn't there, actually, so I just waited. And eventually she showed up, and it turned out that she was practicing this type of meditation. And I thought, oh, okay. And she gave me the reading and told me about this meditation technique. And so I just went to learn, and I met some teachers, and actually I was in Calgary at the time, so I flew out to Vancouver, where I am now, and I learned, and I was kind of hooked from that point on, constantly, now that I had a tool, I constantly had a motivation to experience more peace. So it was like I was introduced to a way to experience what I wanted, and I wanted that to become stable, so I just kept at it, and I learned in 1999, so very quickly, I knew this is what I was going to do the rest of my life, and I decided to become a teacher. And, that's pretty much the story. It continually, you know, the story is always evolving, right? So, but that's it, yeah, in a nutshell. Here we are.
So in terms of in terms of the book, The Zen of Unity, I guess the basis would be this silence that one enters into. And there's different ways to get there. You talk about, you know, meditation techniques, breathing techniques, you know, different teachers, but in the end, has to do with maintaining this silence or not thinking, not having the thoughts running through your mind all the time, but just on receive rather than transmit. Being in that state and then trying to, well, staying in that state, it's not trying to stay in that state. You just stay in that state for as much of the time that you can. Would you say that was kind of accurate?
Yeah, I mean, well, you sound like you're already familiar with that state, right? So you've probably practiced meditation before. Mm-hmm. Is that true? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very natural. I've heard you've been around quite a while, so. So yeah, it's very natural, and of course we'd all love to stay there, and so that's why I encourage a practice that we can do to help us, because in my experience it was like I would pop in and out of that state, and mm-hmm. I needed something to keep me focused, keep me going, because there's a lot of stress in the world. There's, you know, even in my job today, I work in construction. There's a lot of stress around. And mm-hmm. to have a tool, like, I sometimes look around, I'm amazed that people survive without practicing something, meditation, or, you know, people have different ways, of course, of relaxing. But so, yeah, it's all just about exploring this natural stillness. It's not strange. It's very ordinary. It's right here, right now, as we're talking, this still nothingness there. And we call it different things, but it is completely normal, ordinary. So unity, it's already there. We're already experiencing that infinite self, that nature, eternal nature. We just have these separate characters that we identify with. And so we think a lot, like you said. So we're thinking all day, and we kind of don't really pay any attention to that still nothingness that's there. And when we do, either by chance or when we just start to pay attention to it, perhaps as we're seeking, that space of stillness just starts to reveal more and more of its magic, and that it is actually alive and vibrant and easy to experience. And then we get kind of hooked into the search, and we want to keep that, make that experience permanent. And for me, it was always a question of how do I make this experience that I know, and, you know, that I'm reading about in the books, I'm reading about people's experiences, experiencing it. It's very common. How do I make that permanent? How do I live in that totally? And what is it like? You know, what is it like to, you know, be enlightened, as they say? Is it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I had all sorts of ideas. And so that led me to continually explore. And then, of course, share with many teachers that helped me see that I had a lot of ideas and concepts of what that would look like. And virtually everything's wrong. Any idea we have is actually wrong, even though it may have seemed very correct. Right? We know that the experience is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's kind of the problem. Yeah. I mean, you read the books to understand what is beyond your current ways of thinking, what other great people who have attained enlightenment say about enlightenment, but reading what they say about enlightenment is not the experience of enlightenment. So,
right.
You know, that's the thing. You've got to, the practices that you're attracted to and the teachers you're attracted to are probably your best, you know, your best things to follow, because the teachers, I think the teachers help you because they're examples for you, especially when you're in with them. And meditate with them. I think that is very helpful. And then when you are, because it's an energetic thing when you're in a group. I mean, we've had a meditation group here that meets weekly since 1990. So, you know, the meditation practice with the group is way more, I guess it's just a lot easier to do that than it is to, you know, maybe have the discipline to meditate by yourself, you know, on a regular basis. It's just easier. So
absolutely, yeah, and that's my experience too. Yeah, being with a group is incredible, and it does sort of speed things up and makes it easier. And yeah, I was a loner growing up, and I guess I'm still kind of a loner sometimes, but I like being by myself. But I couldn't have done it without, I couldn't have experienced the level of peace anyways, that without mm-hmm. people helping me and being around lots of people who wanted the same thing. And yeah, it's definitely powerful.
Yeah.
The energetic experience of the stillness. Yeah.
So without experiencing it, which is what I would describe as being on receive rather than transmit. So when you're on receive, mm-hmm. you're not thinking anything. You're just being in the unity. And mm-hmm. then everything you need to do, you might not be meditating. You might just be, you know, going around doing what you normally do. But whenever mm-hmm. you're in that state, you just flow. You know, it's just like you just flow through whatever it is. And even if there's difficult things, you don't judge them as difficult. You just kind of know what to do, and you're able to just get through it because you know the best path. And that's mm-hmm. that's what I think you described in your book, that you stayed in these states for, you know, extended periods of time. That the first time you said you were on vacation, is that right?
The first time I was on vacation. Okay, yeah, I remember. Took me a while to remember.
So what happened there?
Yeah.
What happened there?
Well, when I was on vacation in Puerto Rico, I think that's the experience you're referring to, but mm-hmm. My partner at the time was having an amazing experience of just being completely free, and I wasn't, and it was very painful and frustrating for me because, you know, before that, I considered myself to be the advanced one, right, and the one that knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I wasn't. I was in pain, and I was trying for so long to get it right and to do the right thing. I was always trying to get it right, which is really hysterical, right? Here I am, a monk and a teacher, and I'm just constantly mm-hmm. struggling to be more at peace and to not buy into my thoughts and to let go. So there's this pattern there. And what happened is I just started to become open to advice, good advice. And her advice is to really trust my experience. And mm-hmm. what I saw was that the experience I knew a long time that there was this stillness, and many people know that. They trust that there's this, you know, this nameless experience of silence, and it's there. But yet, there's always this doubt, like, there's got to be more. There's got to be something else. There's always something missing. And so in this moment, I just said, you know what? I'm just going to, she said, do that. And I thought, yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do, and give it a shot. And, mm-hmm. and I've heard that so much before, but when I did it in that moment, it started to unfold and blossom, because I stopped listening to my story so much. And it didn't mean that everything went away. It just meant that I became okay with my experience. I even became okay with the trying and the struggling that would come up. And I just was allowing, as they say, just allowing it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it became very easy for me. But then it became difficult too. So that was an experience, but it was a big experience for me because it really showed me that how easy it can be, you know, and it can always be easier. That's the beautiful thing about this journey, path of joy, right? So it always can be easier. So that's good.
Yeah, I think in terms of the things that have happened with my life, I no longer try to, I guess, it's more from an observer standpoint. I just try to observe what's going on. And then when I get information, and I'm getting information pretty much constantly about what's really mm-hmm. going on, and that information is coming from a higher aspect of myself than what I know, because it has information that I don't know at a third dimensional level. So this information is coming in, and then it's kind of like putting everything together like a puzzle, and then from a higher level looking at, and then you see the easiest way through something.
Yes.
So you're getting information not from your senses, you know, not from the third dimensional source, but from a higher source, and it's allowing you to kind of navigate through life the easiest and best way, and everything works out perfectly in the end. Hmm. It may not look like it's going to work out perfectly if you think about it, but at the end of the day, everything was just perfect. So then you realize that you're being guided by something outside of space and time that really does know a lot more than you do about what you need to do, where you need to be, who you need to speak with, what you need to say. And that's, to me, when I'm really in the flow of things, when I'm really in the bliss, everything is just, there's a perfection and a peace. And like you say, no anxiety, no worry, no doubt, no negative emotion, because you're just flowing through something, and that's the best, the highest that things can be.
Yes, that's very well described. Yeah, and that's that flow that we want to be in all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always found that, like, in my personal life, I can always have something to complain about, always find fault with with life,
something,
and, like,
yeah,
you said, the third dimensional level.
Right.
Things aren't going well.
Yeah.
You know, I could have more money, or I could have, you know, there's always something. Always has been something.
Mm-hmm.
But what I discovered is, and I'm not the only one, but discovered is that, yeah, that in the experience of the flow, or the experience of stillness, experiencing that, when everything is, you're receiving that higher knowledge and everything's flowing and you know what to do and it's wonderful, that experience itself is all that we really need. And that life can carry on with its problems and its challenges, but it's like you're in another field. You're in that higher field where
mm-hmm.
it becomes easier for you to, it's almost like you're pretending to take things seriously and you're pretending to deal with the struggles of life, but yet
mm-hmm.
if you're resting in that stillness, it's easy to stay there, and it's like watching a show. Like, and you were talking about that observation, and it's like that, yeah. You're watching this play unfold, and it's the play of you and your story, and it has your flavor, and it's really beautiful from that perspective, even with all the possible drama that can happen, or you
mm-hmm.
know, it can go on. And it's amazing to experience the, like, even my most painful experiences I've gone through, and not like a long time ago, we're talking about recently, even, you know, years or 2 years from now or before, where, you know, a relationship broke up, it's painful, you're going through it, and yet there's this peace there too, and there's this peace, there's this knowingness that it's just a story. Even though it doesn't seem like a story, it seems very personal, very real.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just part of it, though. It's part of being human. So there's this transcendent aspect of the stillness that's also very, very much embracing life, embracing all the, I guess, the nitty-gritty of everything that happens. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one thing I've learned being in the, looking at the from the higher perspective onto my life and onto the problems is that there are actually a lot more choices than what we see from a third dimensional level. Like, for example,
yeah,
in relationships, I see that there are multiple possibilities out there for relationships, you know, in terms of you know, people you work with, people you play with. I mean, things are not limited as we think that they are in our ego sense. You know, we're given a lot more information about choices, and I'm always amazed at how much, you know, how, like I was told that I wasn't supposed to be very busy during this certain period of time, And so I didn't worry about not being busy because my higher self was saying, no, you're supposed to be resting. You're undergoing some significant shifts, so you're not so busy. Okay, fine. But then when my higher self showed me the number of people that are trying to get to me as a surgeon, you know, they're lined up.
Mm-hmm.
They're lined up.
Yeah.
I mean, I was shown they're lined up. You know, it's just that they were trying to protect me during this time period so I wouldn't get sick. You know, I wouldn't be working so hard and then having these shifts in my body and then get sick. But I don't have to worry about there not being patients because there's all sorts of patients that want to get to me. I mean, I was just shown this. And it was like, so you get to see that you have all these choices available in like quantum possibilities. Okay, not that you choose in the ego sense, because you really don't choose that much. I mean, if you're in guidance, you're in guidance. So you already, you know, it's really not a choice because you're guided to choose A over B. So that's not truly a choice. But the point is, the quantum possibilities of what can come into your life are infinite. And that's very freeing. You know, then you don't have to have scarcity thoughts. You don't have to feel like things are constricting, you know, your money's constricting or you don't have very many choices. When in actuality, there's just huge amount of possibilities to come into your life.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's the magic, and it's you know, for me, I've been amazed at that, how I'd have a problem, and I can't figure out how to get out of this problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to see it from that limited perspective.
Right.
And there's no solution, and there really is
right.
no solution. I cannot think of a darn solution, and then I'll suddenly just stop thinking, or I'll even close my eyes, and it's like the solution is so plainly obvious, and I'm like, wow. And I'm thinking, this is amazing. How did I not see
it
that?
It is, yeah. How did you not know that?
And yet, you're right. There is this quantum.
It is, yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of different. And that's not the only solution. You know, if that one doesn't work, there's going to be like six others that will come in. And
yeah.
you know, I think our natural state is in that flow. You know, they talk about the Aborigines being telepathic and being in the dream time and all the amazing things that they know. I mean, they can communicate, you know, inside the universal mind. They don't need, you know, to depend on technology. And I think that's our natural state. I really do. I think we've gotten dumbed down because of a number of different things, but, you know, mainly energetically dumbed down. And we're coming back out of that. But I believe this guidance that you and I are talking about is our natural state. And once everybody gets back into the natural state, most of the world's problems will solve themselves. I mean, nobody has to solve them, you know, do something to solve them. They'll just simply go away.
Exactly. Because they're not there in that experience. They're just not, there is no problem. You know,
right.
And we just create it by thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that intuition that you're talking about, or that is what I would call grace happening, that just life's flowing through us. You know, when you take that to the experience of looking for freedom or enlightenment, the self is already, like you say, it already has it. It's already there. It's already completely has everything we need. And we just don't trust that that's the case. We don't think it's true or not. So we're always looking for, it can't be that simple. It can't be that easy as just allowing what is. You know? And so I guess that's why we have to go through all the stuff we do.
Right.
Experience it. But, so falling down and failing, that's part of it. And that's what I've done, a lot of struggling and effort. But we can, you know, say to others, you don't have to do that. You don't have to. You don't have to struggle. You can just see it. Just see it. Right? But easier said than done, of course.
Yeah, well, the way I think about it is that, you know, everything is pretty much thought. You know, the table that is in front of you there is a table in the physical world, but the thought of the table, which is in the higher mental realm, is much more powerful than any single table, because it's the thought of a table that then allows all the tables in the world to exist. So if you think that, you know, that kind of hierarchy of, you know, there's a physical world, there's the astral world, there's the mental world, and then you realize that there's only really one thought that got everybody in trouble, and that was the idea that we're separate from God. I mean, once we had that idea, then a whole bunch of other stuff happened, and we ended up down here in the very dense world with a lot of problems. Because once you think you're separate from God, all sorts of suffering and all sorts of atrocities and all sorts of, you know, you all of a sudden you're dealing with police forces and nuclear weapons and, you know, pollution and, you know, chemical companies that are out of control, and, you know, you can go on and on, you know, all the things that,
yeah, I'm starting
so,
to get depressed, yeah.
Yeah, really. But if you can reverse the idea of separation and realize you were never separated from God, it's impossible to be separated from God, because if you ever truly were separated from God, you'd cease to exist entirely, you know, that kind of idea. Then you realize that it was just a wrong idea. The whole thing, the whole, you know, everything that's wrong would be corrected if we could just get back to the idea that we're not separate from God.
Yeah, and there's not many people really, it's starting to catch on, but there's not many people who actually look for that sort of freedom to know them, to know themselves and to be beyond separation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in itself is a miracle. But I think as we explore this stillness and that becomes more and more, I guess, obvious to more people, that will kind of catch on. It's like popcorn, right?
Right.
Popcorn.
It starts popping. Yeah, right.
Yeah. What
well,
I find really funny
is
that. Go ahead.
No, I think it will be like that. I think it's going to be a pop here and a pop there and a pop there, and then all of a sudden everybody starts popping open. I mean, I think that's a very good analogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that analogy. Yeah, it's to me, what's really funny though is that everyone goes into that experience a lot, all the time. You know, and regardless of whether we think we're separate or not, regardless of whether we're spiritual or not, that experience is there. We disappear into that experience of just nothing. But we just don't put attention on it. It's not important because it's just nothing. It's just a boring nothing. You know? And we don't think that infinite treasure could be there, but there is. Mm-hmm. And I never valued it. Even when I meditated, I never really valued the beauty of that stillness or the magnificence of it, because I couldn't see it, perhaps, right? But when I started to eventually see that, oh, it's kind of funny, it's a duh experience, like where you hit your hand on your head and you go, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't see that before. But it was it's the experience of really seeing, oh, you mean all I have to do is just simply explore this peaceful nothingness. And all good comes from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all good. And that, to me, is so important. And it's something that is not very, it's not taught in school, right? We don't have, people telling us, they're telling us to be quiet, but for different reasons.
Right.
They're not teaching us to really dive in and explore that, because it is just nothing. It's seen as nothing. There's always an idea that we have of what it looks like, of what it looks like to be free from separation. And that stillness of unity is always there throughout the whole experience. And it's the key to everything. And yet, really, there's nothing that we need to struggle to do. You know, it's not like, it's not something you can really even teach, because it's already there. So that's kind of like the dilemma, like how do you teach something, or how do I convince my boss that he should be more quiet and just go inward?
Yeah.
And yet, you know, everyone has their own way and they come to it. And I think that's happening. It's happening more and more. So it's very exciting. It's exciting to be to see what's happening in the spirit with the spirituality movement around the world. It's pretty fascinating.
It is.
And there's lots. Yeah. Go ahead.
I have a story to tell about a CEO of a company that was doing something at home, and he chopped his tip of his finger off and went to the ER, and I came in and I sewed a tip back on, and then he had to come here to get follow-up and therapy and everything. And you know, then he got well and he went off, and I forgot about him, you know, because I had more patients. And I was in Starbucks one day, and he was standing in line, and he comes over to me and he says, "I need to tell you something. My whole life changed because I cut my finger off." And I went, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I came to your center and I discovered all this stuff about the spirituality that you had out, because, you know, you, sometimes you had to wait a long time to see me, so you had to read all these things I had laying around that have to do with, you know, what we're talking about." And he said, "I started meditating, and now I help my employees learn to meditate, and, you know, the principles that we're talking about here in his company." And he said, "You've changed my life." So God had him chop his finger off in order to come here. To... It's really kind
exactly
of
exactly what he needed. Yes.
Yeah, really. Well, you really don't have to chop your finger off to learn this stuff.
No.
You were able to go to a spiritual bookstore close to you and get the same thing. But, you know, it's funny.
Yeah, well, just a finger. It's got 10 of them.
Yeah. So, but the idea is that when you're ready, something will happen to help you along the way. That's what's really amazing. You know, they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears, and that's really true. For myself, I was a plastic surgeon in the south of town here in Atlanta, and there was a clairvoyant named Adis who kept hearing to find a surgeon named Susan. So she called all the hospitals and asked if there was a surgeon named Susan, and she found, you know, she found me because I was the only Susan, and she came to see me with Barbara Brennan's book, Hands of Light, and she says, "You're a healer, you need to get started." And so what I did is I went into meditation, asked what to do, and I heard, "Quit your job." And so I quit my job and I was off for 5 months studying with this group, meditating about three times a week, and fasting, and, you know, really meditating a lot every day, and fasting, and, you know, became vegetarian and really did a lot of spiritual stuff. And in 5 months, you know, then was guided to go back to work, but my practice was totally different. I was doing laying on the hands. I was able to see what was going on at a higher level. You know, the beeper would go off and I'd see the injury. You know, it was just a whole different level. So, you know, Adis was sent in to, you know, to rope me into 5 months of intense spiritual practices so that I could, and that was in 1990. And you want to know something? So many people around 1990 had a similar experience. I think it had to do with the opening of the harmonic convergence. I think there's just a huge number of people that around 1990 develop spiritual sight and hearing as a result of spiritual practices.
Absolutely, that makes sense. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, it's a powerful time. Yeah, huge shift.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So I think we're in a second huge shift now. We just had, a blood moon, and we're going to have three more of them, and there's a grand cross, and there's a lot of things happening now that give the same opportunity for spiritual growth, I think.
Absolutely. It just happens, right? Yeah. And it happens, for me, it happens despite me.
And, right.
It just happens, and it's nothing you have to do. Just enjoy it. Enjoy the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell me about being guided to write the book. How did that happen?
Yeah, the first one actually got inspired. I was in Spain on a retreat, and one of the teachers just was talking about giving just to the community, and he said, it's not about you. He wasn't directing it to me. There was a group of us. He said, "Oh, don't make it about you. And something about that statement, because I'd been making it kind of about me in some way, and that hit me somehow. And I just decided that I was going to start writing. I already had a series of topics that I had written, emails that I'd been sending out. And so I started to write a book. And I thought, how am I going to write a book? Because it seemed impossible, because I didn't do very well in English 30 and in high school. But I thought, how am I going to do this? So I just started working on it and playing with it. And then I just got really passionate, and everything just came out very, very fluid. And that was the when the first one came out, I felt like, you know, good, nice accomplishment. I was kind of done. I was glad it was over, because I thought, wow, that took a little bit of effort. And but I'm glad it's done. And then, out of nowhere, I had this rush of passion to write about nothing. And it was pretty funny. It just came out of nowhere. And the it was literally nothing to write. It's about nothing. And it just came out, very little editing. It just flew out of me. And it was like that thing, I don't know if you've experienced it, where you're just doing something and you're not even... after you're done, you're like, where was I? Like, I was typing, and then I couldn't even remember typing. So it was like no one doing the book at all. And then when it was done, I was like, oh, okay. That was it. So that was the way of nothing.
That's great.
And again, I thought, yeah, it was really nice. And it was it's a small book, of course, because you wouldn't want a huge, thick book just about nothing, because that would be scary. So it's a small book. And then the third one just happened naturally, because it was like, okay, there's nothing. What's next? And then the answer was, okay, well, unity, enlightenment. And so then that one came out of that. So they're all fun to write. I really enjoy writing.
Yeah, well, you've got a lot of funny stories in here. I like that.
Yeah, I'll have to read it someday.
There you go. You have to remember
forget my
what you story. Read, huh?
Exactly.
So what do you think you'll do next? Do you have any ideas?
Well, just doing it one day at a time. You know, tomorrow we have a group meeting, meditation group, like you were talking about. So we're going to spend all day together. So that's going to be fun. And then the following week, I'm going off to a class on the other side of Canada, Thunder Bay. We do a weekend workshop there, so that's exciting. And, yeah, so I'm going to take it a day at a time, and I'm also working on another book right now, but just unfolding slowly. And also I'm going to Greece on a big retreat, and I'm going to meet a lot of teachers. We get together every once in a while, and there's this place called Patmos in Greece. It's a little island, and we go to have fun. We go swimming and snorkeling, the beach, and eat good food, have a good time.
Is that near Crete or Santorini?
It's near Samos. I think it's near the Turkey side. I should check a map. It's a little tiny island. Yeah.
So it's near Santos?
Samos.
Oh, Samos. Okay.
Yeah, there's so many Greek islands. Little ones.
Yeah, I got arrested on Santos.
You got arrested? What were you doing there?
It's the only time I got arrested. Well, I went there after medical school with my boyfriend, and we rented motorcycles at the, you know, because the boat drops you off in the port town, right? We rented motorcycles, and we went up to the only town, like, on the other side of the island, and the police chief was an attorney doing his one-year service, and the doctor was a doctor doing his one-year service. And one of them spoke English and the other spoke German, but everybody else in the town was illiterate. And when we came into town, they were thrilled. You know, our motorcycles were broken, but they were thrilled because, you know, they were bored, I guess. And so they threw a big party, and we had fish and all these vegetables. And I learned to drink red seedy wine with Coke, which is different. Yeah. And then they put us up for the night, and then the next morning they put us on the bus with the motorcycles, and we got back down and got arrested for stealing the motorcycles. But we were not worried about getting arrested. We were worried about the guy that owned the motorcycles because he was diaphoretic. His blood pressure was high. We'd just gotten out of medical school, so we were, you know, we were taking care of him. And he looked like he was having a heart attack. So police chief said, look, he's been through a big stress. Why don't you just pay him some extra money and he'll drop the charges? So we did.
Oh, my God.
So anyway.
Now, that's a story. That's a good
story. That's a story, yeah. The time I got arrested in Greece. Yeah, but anyway.
I wish I had those stories. I wish I was arrested.
They're fun when they're happening.
Yeah.
Actually, I wasn't really worried about it then. I mean, it was just fun.
Yes.
So do you have any contact information you want to give, any websites or information about your other books?
Sure. The website is www.paramanandashaya.com. And spell Paramananda is P-A-R-A-M-A-N-A-N-D-A. I-S-H-A-Y-A, Paramananda Ishaya. And the books are Path of Joy, The Way of Nothing, and Without You There. So
right.
Go to the website, and there's information there and some articles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to learn about the practice is that I teach, it's The Bright Path. So there's a website,
okay.
thebrightpath.com. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the next book... why don't you get in touch with me when you get it done, and I'll have you back on the radio show.
Awesome. It's been fun. Thank you so much.
It has been. You're welcome.
Yeah. Right on.
I appreciate you joining us. I love your book. It's it is a really good book for anybody who is a serious student of enlightenment, because you make a lot of really good points in it that obviously made from someone going through the process, you know, not just not an intellectual study of it, but an actual practical study of it, which is really nice.
Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on. We have been interviewing Paramananda. Did I get that right? Paramananda?
You kind of got it. Kind of got it, yeah. You're getting close.
Kind of? Okay.
Yeah.
He is the author of Without You There, The Zen of Unity. I highly recommend you read this book. And join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care, P.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.